Everyone, welcome to your, must be May 4th today. May 5th? Okay, well, I'm
so close. April 6th?
At the right.
Oh, that's really bad.
Okay, that's very bad.
I just wish it was May 5th. We just wish we were in special session.
We do, because then we would get to spend more time with folks like you.
I know.
Anyway, good morning, everyone. As you can probably tell, I'm suffering from a bad chest cold. And I have a court appearance this morning, so we're going to try and buzz through these appointments as quickly as possible. We would like to welcome Senator Mona Sanderson as a new member. Welcome, and thanks for joining us this morning. And Senator Nelson, thanks for the wonderful chocolatey tidbit treats. Yes. Not that that'll be a problem this morning. So, well, I take that back. I think we're having Mr. Repine testify shortly. So, I'm going to open a public hearing on OECDD and ask Mr. Repine to come forward. So good morning. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want this particular position?
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. I had their staff circulate just a one-page or two-sided document that probably summarizes much of that question. For the record, I am Bob Repine, Interim Acting Director of Oregon Economic and Community Development. I penned this just short but brief bio of myself just to kind of put some perspective of, and for myself, why am I doing this? I think it's important. It really goes back to when I actually moved to Oregon early in the 70s. I got involved at the community level on planning commission issues. I felt that was a responsibility of me as a citizen of the state of Oregon to be involved in helping my community develop and grow. From there, I took another leap of faith and an opportunity, one could arguably say it was an opportunity, and ran for public office in 1988. I was elected as a legislative member of this assembly and served 10 years until 1998. Then another opportunity arose when then Governor Kitzhaber asked me whether or not I'd consider applying for the position of Director of Oregon Housing Community Services. And I did, and I served in that capacity for a continuous 8-year period of time. And now we have another opportunity relative to my career and what I want to contribute to the state of Oregon, being asked by current Governor Kulongowski to consider and accept the role as Director of Economic Community Development. I bring that as a backdrop to you because I think as many of you who are sitting on the dais today, we find ourselves not going down the road of being politically involved, maybe for a variety of reasons, but somehow many of us find our way through this, what I think is a very amazing process, both as an elected official and somebody who serves in the capacity of the citizens of the state of Oregon. I have had people, including many of you on this panel, said congratulations to me, and other ones who have said, you're crazy. And I acknowledge both are correct in some ways. But life is much about not knowing where you're going to go and how you're going to get there. So that might attribute to some of the crazy comments. But I have always held a principle from my elected official days, from my serving at my local level planning commission, to the director of housing, and now to the agency director of economic community development, that somehow I have been asked or requested by someone to contribute to the betterment of this state. And I think about that regularly. I think about my 15-year-old son, who I would like to be able to offer him an opportunity to have a state that will respond and react to what his needs will be when he becomes an adult and will carry on in the tradition of other Oregonians. So it's with that spirit and with that sense of optimism I have submitted myself to the governor's request to be the interim director, and now I'm in front of your committee requesting to consider me for approval so I can continue in this work of making Oregon a better place to live.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Repine?
Yeah.
Sarah Nelson.
So I want to congratulate Bob for doing this. And actually, I've been working with him already on several issues. And I know I'd just like to get your opinion of the world. I think that the...
His opinion of the world. Could you narrow that a little bit, Senator Nelson?
Well, early for
I was taken by that last thing. But, I mean, water is the biggest issue, I think, in the state of Oregon right now. Columbia River water, if we want to solve the problems of the state of Oregon, education, health care, helping my farmers out in eastern Oregon, or helping the maritime pilots make sure they can get up and down the river, transport goods and stuff like that. I'd just like to get your view of the world. How do you think we should view water in this whole economic development?
Well, Madam Chair, committee members, that's a great global question. Actually, if you want to think fundamentally, I've always contended that there are the two issues that will cause this world or this nation to come divided will be on two issues. It'll be the division between the young and the old, and it will be the division or the lack thereof of water. I think those will be the two warring elements that the globe might face in some future, quite frankly, because there's a limited amount of space and resources, and there's a limited amount of palatable water as we know it today. Relative to your question and the issues that we've been working on with you and some other members in your community, water is an essential issue. We cannot encourage economic development. We cannot encourage viable communities to be successful or survive if we find that their water resources and supplies are dwindling or, in many cases, going away in total. In your water issue that you're talking about off of the Columbia area, river area, is one distinct water issue. I know in the Central Oregon area toward the Bend Deschutes County area, they have another distinctively different water issue because they take much of their water from wells. And they're drilling a lot deeper today to find that same amount of water that they've had in the past. So you're correct. And how we start thinking strategically on how to either acquire new water or redirect water that we have that is available to us and put it in some kind of storage capacity, either reservoir and or rehydrating our well systems. Many are strong opportunities, but you're absolutely correct. If you want to stagnate or stop in total economic development or prosperous states, just have an issue around their water issues, and you'll find that will be the number one stopper for much of the development in the future.
Anything further, Senator Nelson?
Not only my part of the country, but I've always thought, why don't we pump water north or west or east out of Detroit Lake over into the Bend area and sell it and dedicate some of that money to schools? Ever thought of that idea?
Well, I hadn't thought of it until you mentioned it. But
well, you take care of it.
You know, Senator and the committee members, there is an amazing amount of knowledge and opportunities that the state, I think, still has untapped yet, and we have opportunities to be creative and thoughtful in how we do things differently. And hopefully we are just the beginning of this generation. Future generations will think more globally and figure out how we'll solve some of those major problems that could be the spoilers for future generations of the state.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for being a little late this morning. Mr. Repine, there's been a tension in this building, as well as I think among the public, about what direction the agency ought to take. Is it in the business of developing communities? Is it in the business of, for lack of a better word, setting the table and then getting out of the way so that private companies can come in and create jobs? One of my old saws in this building has been petunias and planters versus sewers and clean water. And against that biased backdrop, I would welcome your comments about what direction you think you could take an agency that has struggled with its identity and struggled with Oregonians' expectations of what the state's economic development arm ought to be doing.
Thank you, Senator Johnson and committee members. You know, obviously a great topic. One of the things I have learned in the last 30 days that economic development is like many things. Everybody has an opinion about it. And I will tell you, each one of the opinions that I've heard are very defensible and honorable opinions, but there is a variety of people, from people who believe the agency should be more engaged to the extent that we should be less engaged, to the extent that we should be doing just national or international recruitment, that we should be or looking at small development in the business communities that exist, and even going as far as people say you really need to do some more attractive work in downtowns, which could include your petunias and flags flying from the poles on street corners. You know, as I've had a chance to be with the agency now for 30 days, I think much of this will be coming to the surface soon because, as Senator Johnson well knows, as one of the charges that you gave this agency last session was to revisit and reevaluate its statutory authorities. Now, this is a very distinct and unique opportunity for a state agency to kind of assess itself and say, in the time that we have existed under statutory law, from the beginning people who thought about us to the people currently who are thinking about what we should be involved in, how much of that has changed? And I would tell you that if you look back in history, everything from petunias to recruitment of international companies has been part of our repertoire. And I think to many cases we have created quite the smorgasbord of opportunities of expectation from all of you and the citizens of the state of Oregon. It is my hope, and I think we're on the right track, that we will be bringing forward to be reviewed this interim a rewrite of the statutes that will recapture what the mission of the agency is as it is seen today, and that is framed against the context of the performance measures that have been put in place by this assembly for the agency to react and respond to. So those becoming the backdrop of what we will do and how we will do that work in the coming years will hopefully be a represented in the statutory rewrite. What that means, quite frankly, is that there will be people who are very committed to the petunias, who might find that the petunias will no longer be part of our agenda and our workload. There will be pushback. There will be people who said, you know, I remember when that was put in 15 years ago, and I thought it was a great idea then, and I still think, for some reason, it's a good idea today. It's up to us to defend why we have suggested some of the changes and some of the elimination of some of the statutes that have been given to us over time. If you were to read our statutes, it reads like a cheap novel. It would be like taking the binder off of a paperback book, throwing the pages up in the air, and then putting them back in order again and trying to make sense of what the story was, because it has just been kind of put together in a very inconsistent way that you will find sections that contradict sections that are in other parts of it. And so we are going through that process. And again, I think the staff is excited about it, because my other opinion for the agency staff, they're a group of committed 107 people. They have been very committed, and I suspect and I suggest they will be continually committed. I truly believe as we get a better focus of where the agency can and will go, you will see some amazing changes, because they will have some direction as opposed to being pushed and pulled because of some of the pieces that still people can point at and say, well, you're still supposed to be involved in that activity. And hopefully as we cull through those things, we say, no, we're doing these things because they are germane to the performance measures of the agency now. These things we won't be doing anymore, and that's the way life will be, and we can only do so many things at one time and address so many people at one time.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of full disclosure, I have been sitting as an ex officio member of the commission, and have, from that perspective, a rather unique insight into Mr. Repine's first 30 days on the job. And I have to compliment him for the gusto with which he has approached taking a look at this giant run of statutes that you can see almost successive legislators, legislators and legislatures adding different expectations of the agency. I think he's assembled a very remarkable team led by Cora Parker, who is combing through those statutes. And I think that at the end of the interim, we'll have a much leaner, clearer set of expectations for the agency. And in the first 30 days, Ms. Repine's gotten right after that assignment.
Great. Senator Johnson, anything else? Mr. Repine, just one quick question. Many of us are pleased to see you in your new role as Director of Department of Economic and Community Development, assuming the Senate approves your appointment. My question is, our concern is about the department you just left and sort of the direction you see it going in. We felt with you there, there was a passionate advocate for housing and making sure we had a long-range plan and we're implementing it. What do you see what will happen to that particular department, if you can forecast on the record at this point in time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate that. Committee members, as I took on my work responsibilities at the Agency of Oregon Housing Community Services for 8 years, I wanted to make sure that there was a template that was there at all times, and it is there today as I left that agency, that gave a consensus direction for how the agency will work, where they will go, and how they will achieve it. We've been very embraced strong strategic planning processes that are very living documents that are up to subject to review on an annual on an ongoing basis with the senior membership of the association and the staff. We have that in place, and I think between the way the budget last session was presented, the requests that were made to establish the budget priorities, they all reflect back both to the strategic plan of the agency, and then they couple back on top of all that to the performance measures that were set forth in this legislative body. So there is a map already in place for my successor. Now, obviously, I'm not involved with the picking or appointing of that person, but I hope the senior staff that I have left there who are running the ship right now, and acting interim director Rick Krager, who was the chief financial officer who had worked with me for 8 years, is at the helm. And he's doing an amazing job in light of all the other responsibilities that come forth with his other chief financial officer position. And he's also the interim deputy director. So he has three jobs right now. But he's young, and he's engaged, and following through on what I would have been, what I believe, the same road that I would have gone down with the agency to have it ready and well prepared for the next legislative session. So, Madam Chair and committee members, subject to whoever the person will be who will be asked to be the director of that agency, if that person chooses, they can come into an agency that has a map and a plan well in place for them for at least the next few years if they chose to.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Repine. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you.
With that, we'll close the public hearing on the director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development and open a public hearing on Long-Term Care Commission and ask Ms. Meredith Cote to come forward. Did I say Ombudsman Van?
Ombudsman Person,
thank you. I did not use it. I used a gender-neutral term. Good morning and welcome. How are you?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Meredith Cote, and I am your state long-term care ombudsman.
Person. We changed it while you were coming up to the
and I am your state long-term care person. I am here today because after all these years, I remain passionate about the work that I do and the frail elderly Oregonians that I serve. It's a privilege to be in a position to contribute to their well-being, their quality of life, and their quality of care. The Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman is an advocacy agency that works with long-term care facility residents. We are part of the state's quality assurance effort in long-term care, and we identify, investigate, and resolve complaints made by or on behalf of the residents of long-term care facilities, and we are a voice representing the consumer perspective in numerous policy and regulatory forums. I've worked hard to build a long-term care ombudsman program that Oregonians can be proud of. My goal has been to run a fiscally responsible agency that delivers a responsive quality service. And I have enjoyed both the challenges and the rewards of accomplishing that goal with a workforce that is largely volunteer. So I guess with that, I'll stop and ask what questions you might have of me today.
Thank you. Any questions?
Just a quick comment.
Ms. Senator Monica Anderson.
Madam Chair. Your agency is one, or the ombudsman, is one agency that my staff calls frequently. We get a lot of calls from our constituents that need assistance, and the show you're running, they have been very well, they respond well, and they follow up, and it's been great. So as far as I'm concerned, it's being run quite well.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, and you of all people know how critical this position is. So any other questions? We really appreciate your work and appreciate your willingness to continue in this position. So
thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Appreciate it.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing on long-term care ombudsperson, and I'm going to open a public hearing on the Judicial Fitness Committee and ask Mr. Lane Barlow to come on up.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Good to see you, Mr. Barlow. Welcome, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your concerns today.
Okay. Now, we'll make this very brief in the interest of time. First of all, Oregon Men's Association is basically a loose coalition of individuals that's just concerned about the way the state interacts with families. Custodial, non-custodial parents are members of our group, male and female. Anyway, we have no personal quarrel with the governor's current appointee. Provided written testimony. I'm just going to hit a couple of highlights here. We're concerned that the new appointee will be critical of what happens. From the current numbers we find off of the commission's website, a citizen has less than a 1 in 114 chance of a complaint against a judge being acted on. There's the assumption that judges do what's right and follow the Constitution and rule of law is a fallacy. It doesn't happen. As legislators, all legislators, you are charged by our Constitution, Section 1, Article 22, with a direct concern for this. The operation of the law shall never be suspended except by authority of the Legislative Assembly. I'm here to tell you that after over a decade of court watch, the judges suspend the law daily from the bench. That's basically all we have to say.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Barlow? We appreciate you joining us this morning. Appreciate you addressing your concerns.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. All right. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on the Judicial Fitness Commission and open a public hearing on Hispanic Affairs. Is Mr. David Molina in the audience?
I'm here, Senator, but my mother is on her way. So
okay.
If I can go through her glass, that'd be great.
That'd be fine. I'm sure the others in the audience will appreciate that. All right. We're going to close that public hearing. We're going to open a public hearing on apprenticeship and training and invite Jennifer Burnett and Tammy Howard forward.
Oh, you're a Native American.
Good morning. Thanks so much for traveling to be here with us this morning. We'd like to hear a little bit about yourselves and why you want to participate on this particular commission. For folks in the audience, we started this process about a year ago to bring new commission members forward so that we as legislators could meet them and start to get to know all the folks serving on our boards and commissions. And speaking for myself only, I'm just amazed at the incredible breadth and depth of qualifications of Oregonians who are willing to serve on our boards and commissions. So take it away.
Well, thank you so much. My name is Jen Brunette, and I'm pretty excited to be here today. I work at the Intel Corporation, and I work with our corporate services group, which is the side of our business that builds our buildings and keeps them maintained. And I'm a little nervous to be here today. I've been a community college educator for a long time before I came back to Intel, and I worked at my community college in New Mexico specifically on getting our students into living wage jobs and focused a lot on placement, particularly women and students of color in technical jobs. And I focused a lot of my attention over the last years on programs that sort of fill the gaps between the talent that our students have and the talent that our apprenticeships that our apprentices have, and finding the employment and the sort of support that they need to get and retain those jobs. So I'm excited about being here and the opportunity to continue the sort of almost obsession that I have with what has to happen to make these programs work, right? They work really well. We know apprenticeship and training programs work. So what does it take to make them work better, and both for the people entering them and staying in them, and for us on the employer side? So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Howard.
Hi. Thank you, Madam Chair. committee members. My name is Tammy Howard, and I work at Georgia Pacific Paper Mill in Toledo. And I'm also very pleased to be here. I'm not as experienced in dealing with some of the apprenticeship or employment issues that are possibly in front of the state of Oregon. But what I do bring to the potential appointment is energy and a willingness to hunker down and learn about the process of apprenticeship in the state of Oregon, what some of the issues might be in front of apprenticeship, and see what I can do to be an objective, energetic part of that process. Thank you.
Thank you. My concern to the two of you is the lack of women and people of color getting involved in the trades, and so my sort of kick in the seat of pants to the two of you is doing what we can on the ground, whether it's working with high schools or whatever, to make sure that we're diversifying the trades. I also think it's critically important that we have a number of kids in high school that are not college-bound, and we are not really making the transition very well, and I think you all can play a role on this particular council. So if you want, you don't need to respond to that, but just to let you know, that's where my concerns are. Any other questions or comments? Sarah Nelson.
I'll continue with my direction is people need jobs. Everything's related. You know, you're sitting there talking about training and all this sort of thing, but I mean, you've got to talk about infrastructure, whether it's water, telecommunications, all these particular things. You want to fund good schools. You want to fund health care. We got to have jobs. Taxpayer is not willing to pay any more taxes, so we have to broaden the base of our economy if we're going to start funding some of these public services. So when you're doing a job, kind of a big, large global picture here is that trust people at the community level, because basically they'll get the job done, and try and trust us legislators too, because we actually do care.
Any other comments, questions? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just at the risk of piling on, I want to add my voice to Senator Brown's with respect to the advocacy for the trades at the community college level. I think collectively and individually we have devalued vocational occupations. And with an eye towards everybody going on to a four-year institution, we got a lot of PhDs driving cabs. I'm just thrilled to hear you say that encouraging people to pursue very lucrative, very honorable jobs coming out of apprentice programs just as music to my ears. So you can respond if you'd like, but I just wanted to add emphasis to Senator Brown's comments.
I just agree with you, and as the economy continues, that's why I'm here, right?
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. We appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing on the Apprenticeship and Training Council, unless there's anyone in the audience wishing to testify on behalf or against these two women. All right, let's open a public hearing on the Board of Dentistry. I've got Ms. Mary Davison in the audience, and let's get Dr. Norm Magnuson on the phone. Ms. Davison, can you come forward? Thank you. Appreciate you driving so far to be with us this morning. Oh, and for my colleagues' information and for those in the audience, we had another appointment under consideration. It was Dr. John Allen. He has withdrawn himself from consideration, so we're not going to move forward on that appointment. Ms. Davison, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Actually, I came home. I came up here from the Dells last night because I thought I'd get a good night's sleep, but... it didn't quite work out.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I welcome the opportunity to be here, and I'm really thankful. This is a great opportunity for me, and I'm happy to be here. My name is Mary Davidson, and I'm a dental hygienist. I live in the Dells, Oregon. I'm employed in private practice in the Dells and public health in Hood River. I've been involved in dental hygiene for the last 27 years. For many years, I've lived and enjoyed working in Oregon. Quality of dentistry and dental hygiene, specifically dental hygiene care, has always been a goal and a passion of mine. I believe that my experience and my knowledge and my interest in serving the public would be an asset to this position. It's important to me to protect the public and maintain a professional standard. I'd welcome the opportunity to serve on the Oregon Board of Dentistry. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think Dr. Magnuson?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Welcome to your committee on rules, your Senate committee on rules. At the dais, we have Senator Betsy Johnson, our fabulous staffer, Marjorie Taylor, myself as chair, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Manas Anderson. You may have heard Mary Davidson testify. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wish to serve on this particular board?
Well, I'm a dentist. I've been a dentist in Oregon for 23 or 24 years, and I've been involved in organized dentistry for a number of those years and have really enjoyed it. And I'm always interested. I think it's a responsibility that we have to do things that benefit the profession and the public, and to keep them working together for the benefit of both of those. This opportunity came my way here a couple months ago, and I kind of thought about it along and decided it would be a good opportunity for me, and that I'd be a good asset to the board.
Great. Ms. Davidson, Dr. Magnuson, one of my concerns is making sure that low-income folks in this state have access to dental health care. Could you talk a little bit about that from your perspective?
Well, I believe that health care is a right. I believe that when people are in pain, children, adults, whoever it is, the quality of their work and what they can do, whether they can study at school, whether they can figure out what's going on, is greatly diminished. I think that since I do work in public health, I do have a little bit of a feeling for this subject because not everybody is able to qualify for dental insurance or I know my family personally, in my opinion, my family has never had dental insurance when I was growing up, and we had to make sacrifices for the children to get, for all of us to get dental health care, and I would like to see it not to be as much of a sacrifice. That's my perspective on that.
Thank you. Dr. Magnuson?
Yes. On access to care for the poor?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that. The Dental Society here in Oregon and internationally has worked with the children's group on an example of Give Kids a Smile. We've worked on that process. Northwest Medical Vans is a way to work with the poor, and I've been involved with that. Eugene here has a clinic, and I've been involved in that. So I really believe that we have a responsibility to take care of those people who don't have direct access for a variety of reasons. One of them is financially, of course. It is a touchy subject at times. The profession wants to be able to make sure that it maintains its ability to take care of patients, but I also think that the profession has a responsibility to society to make sure that those who can't afford it still get some sort of access to care.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Manas Anderson.
Thank you. I'll be a little bit more pointed. I don't think that Oregon's doing a good job in reaching those who need dental care, particularly our low income, and it's vital that dentists and dental hygienists work together. In my health committee, we've been, we deal with scope of practice issues all the time, and I do feel there's a strong role of dental hygienists and dental assistants in providing care, and I really would like to see the dentists be very open to expanding the services that you people, the dental hygienists and assistants, can perform in the community. Thanks.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment. I think that Dr. Magnuson was too modest to point out on his resume the amount of work that he has done in Russia, Costa Rica, Mexico, providing dental services, presumably to people who would have no access otherwise. His listing of his volunteer dental work is very impressive.
Thank you. Anything else? I think you've wowed them, so you can go home and sleep in your own bed tonight, Ms. Davidson.
Thank you.
Dr. Magnuson, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
All righty. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on the Board of Dentistry. I'm sorry. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to testify on behalf on the Board of Dentistry on behalf of these appointments or against one of these appointments? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on the Board of Dentistry. Let's open a public hearing on the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Mr. Kevin Shuba, why don't you come forward? Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm Kevin Shuba. I'm candidate for confirmation of the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners.
Could you tell us why you want to serve on this particular board, given some of the issues that's faced in the past?
Well,
currently faced.
Okay.
I spent 13 years at the Attorney General's office before I went to private practice, and for about 8 of those years I was assigned to various regulatory boards. This actually was one of the boards I was assigned to. I learned about the chiropractic profession. I enjoyed working with them and advising them as a lawyer, and now that I'm in private practice and not in public service anymore, this is an opportunity for me to serve the public in a different role as a public member, and I hope to bring some of the skills that I have and some of the information that I gathered in those years to bear as a public member on this board and help them to regulate and unify the chiropractic profession.
Great. Question?
It's a noble end.
Senator Nelson?
Easier said than done.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you. I don't want to pass over this lightly because I think this is a very troubled board. And throughout my entire service in the legislature, I have heard from both sides of this roiling debate about how broken the board is, about how fractured the chiropractic community is with respect to standards of care, and I just don't want to pass over it lightly. I think that your willingness to step forward into a position that I think is pretty well known and pretty well documented in this building is service on a complex board with a lot of complex issues is laudable, and I would welcome after you get yourself immersed in the difficulties facing that board, welcome some kind of a report from you about how you think things are going. It's unfair, I think, to ask you at this juncture what you would do to try to repair things, but I just applaud your bravery in taking on this position.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I'd be happy to come back and talk about things after I've had a chance to be a part of the board for a while.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Montesano.
Yes, and Madam Chair, and talk to with us one-on-one also regarding issues if you don't want to put it on record.
Well, thank you for that too, Senator.
In your spare time. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
That we're going to close the public hearing on the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners and open a public hearing on the State Board of Education. Mr. Paz. And then next up, we've got the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board and then the Asian Affairs.
Good morning,
morning.
Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Artemio Paz. I'm a resident of Springfield, where I've resided for 40 years. I'm interested in participating as a member of the Board of Education because of some lifetime interest, both as a person of color going through an educational system in California and then locally going through the University of Oregon, and also as an adjunct assistant professor in the School of Architecture in the early 80s, directly dealing with people in the design realm and also teaching ethics and the practice of architecture, ultimately being the chairperson in the mid-90s of the Lane Regional Workforce Quality Committee, where we dealt with the first 21st Century Act and issues dealing with the STEM and the CAM, and also regional workforce issues related to school-to-work activities. And we issued contracts on high-performance work organizations. We had relationships with the community college, the University of Oregon, and all of the major school districts in Lane County. Through that, my practice in architecture and dealing with issues of funding and budgets, I think there's a bit of a qualification. And also in the mid-80s, for 7 years, I was chairperson of the Sites and Facilities Committee for School District 19 in Springfield. Ultimately, I also served with Eugene School District on their Futures Committee. I'm honored that I would be considered for this position, and I feel like I can bring some of that background to bear on some of the issues that the committee is presently looking at.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Johnson.
Yes, please. Thank you. One of the things that I'm interested in pursuing, and this may be premature given that you have yet to start your service, but just if you could comment a little bit on your general philosophy about the desirability of Oregon looking at a core curriculum in K-12 that would eventually lead to some kind of a standardized curriculum so that the expectation of a senior matriculating into our university system would be that they had competency in certain core elements, writing particularly, reading. If you have any kind of a philosophical attitude or opinion about that issue.
Senator, I do. I'm not sure that I can articulate it to the extent I'd like to, but I think that exiting exams, issues related to reading skills and math and science are prevalent. I think that you have to look at Thomas Friedman's most common and recent statements about innovation, in that you need to stress science and math, but you also need to stress the arts. And the liberal arts are part of the educational requirements, and that part of the magic is why Americans are recognized as being creative innovators internationally. And I think that I recall in the mid-90s, John... one of the director of the Endowment of Arts coming to the University of Oregon and commenting on the arts as being the second most effective area of discipline that creates wealth for the United States behind the aerospace industry. And that was John Frohnmayer, and Frohnmayer's presentation articulated the need for the liberal arts and the humanities, as you also stress mathematics and science and reading skills. And I would say that my ethos really understands that freedom is articulated through a public education process in the United States, and the core of that is our public educational system. So I think to articulate the standards and how that stress actually occurs, I know that districts are bound by certain financial resources, and the issues are site-specific.
Anybody else? Senator Nelson?
Two parts. My community theme is, you know, everything's related. Education needs more money. That's not what I'm saying right at the moment. I think folks like you on boards and doing things of what you're doing have to be really advocates for looking outside, different ways to do it. Our legislative revenue guy has told us in the last session that there are several states that came through the last downturn that were able to fund their education to the extent they needed to. Didn't matter what the taxing system was, the tax they were using, whatever unique thing was within their state. Hawaii has tourism, Nevada has gambling, Alaska mm-hmm. has oil. What is Montana? Or what? Montana has minerals and oil. We have to look at what Oregon does, because we're becoming a mediocre state as far as education is concerned. We're not spending enough money there, and that's coming from a Republican, I want you to know. Just for the record. So I just want to be aware of that. And my second issue and concern is the Department of Education, and I know they're under a lot of stress from federal requirements, but when I hear from my local superintendents and folks at my school districts, they're talking about, well, there's so many rules and reports and things that are coming out of the Department of Education that they get, that the local districts get really no return. I'd just like your comments or your thoughts about either one of those solutions.
Well, I think at the national level, No Child Left Behind stresses some issues, but doesn't finance very well the mandates and the initiatives that are being promulgated at the national level. And I think that is problematic. And recently I have come to understand understand that the feds are very sympathetic to that issue, that as they improve infrastructure nationally, they've included schools, and they will be issuing certain kinds of funding mechanisms for those mandates.
What's your thought on the Department of Education?
At the national level?
No.
No, here.
How are they helping us educate our children better? I mean, by
well, I think that it's clear that the stress on math skills and science is a real need. I recall in the mid-90s that we were ranked around 22nd internationally of all Western civilizations in science and math. People in Yugoslavia and obscure Eastern European nations were far in excess of our capabilities in science and math. But I think that if you stress those areas, you need to look at the liberal arts. If you look at the pragmatic issues of remedial education and our employers, they're looking for people that also have soft skills as well as those technical skills, and I think that we have to stress those. And coming from the private sector, I'm very aware of that.
One more.
Sarah Nelson.
I'm a little bit more specific. I will send you a copy of a letter that I received from one of my superintendents out at Axiom Enterprise School System. Really very critical of the Department of Education, basically saying the Department of Education is not answering our needs anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just send that to you, and then so that you're aware of, you know, kind of practical on the ground. There's some issues going on there that I think really need to be addressed.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Mr. Paz, my question for you is, mm-hmm. I think our Board of Education with our superintendent's leadership has done a good job working to take some steps to close the achievement gap. Any thoughts on specific steps we should be taking in the future that we're not taking now?
Well, I think that the private sector could participate at the middle school and high school level in more creative fashions. There could be partnerships. I think that you really have to tell compelling stories to these young people when they're in the eighth grade. You have to hook them into dreaming about their future and making a better community. And I think that it's a bit late if you're trying to tell your story and your narrative in their 10th and 11th year. So I think that those partnerships have occurred. CM2H has done some really nice work with middle school and high schools where their engineers go in there, they design bridges, they design infrastructure, and they hook those people. And then once they're hooked, they'll deal with the math that they need, and they'll deal with the science that they need to make their dream come true. And I think that there are lots of examples that could occur for the private sector.
Thank you. Mr. Paz, we appreciate you joining us this morning. Unless there are any questions, we're going to let you head back down to Springfield this morning.
So. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Anybody wishing to testify on the State Board of Education appointment of Mr. Paz? All right, we're going to close that hearing. Move to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. Mr. Jordan, Mr. Keeley. Appreciate you joining us this morning. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wish to serve on this particular board?
All right. Good morning. My name is Joseph Jordan. I'm from Newport, Oregon. And I'm a teacher at Toledo High School in Toledo, Oregon. I'm the president of the Lincoln County Education Association. I'm also on the board of directors of the Oregon Education Association. And I'm very committed to working within education in Oregon, doing my best to try and improve it, and I think it needs dramatic improvement. It was suggested to me that I take this position, and it was recommended to the governor, and I think I would do well in it. And just the experiences that I've had, I've seen a lot of things across the state and experienced, especially with my union work, trying to resolve differences and problems, and I tend to keep a level head and look at things objectively and dispassionately, and I think I would be effective.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Keeley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Senators. I'm Tim Keeley, Kevin Timothy Keeley, but I go by Tim. I currently, and for the next 86 days, the superintendent in Bethel Schools in Eugene, Oregon, and I will, on July 1st, revert to my position as assistant superintendent. I greatly look forward to that. I didn't seek the position of superintendent. I served to help this year, and I will look forward to not having the ultimate responsibility. I look forward to serving in the role on the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board for a number of reasons, but primarily I think that we have a fine system of public education in the state. Occasionally individuals do things that might cause them to not be great candidates to serve our kids and our communities, and I would look forward to the opportunity to serve in the role on the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board.
Thank you. Questions? I guess you guys are off the hook this morning. I appreciate your willingness to work so hard and do some additional service for the state of Oregon. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Anybody else wishing to testify on these two appointments for the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board? Okay, we're going to close that public hearing. We're going to open a public hearing on the Asian Affairs Commission, Mr. Chin, Mr. Kong, Mr. Sato, and then we have Mr. Momeni on the phone.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Committee members, I'm Bill Chin.
My name is David Kong.
And I'm Dennis Sato.
Good morning, welcome. Just tell us a little bit about yourselves and why you want to serve on this particular commission.
I'm a legal writing professor at Lewis and Clark College, presently a Tigard resident. And I'd like to serve on the commission because there are needs, concerns, issues affecting the Asian American community that I believe the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs can help address and resolve, because it is a state commission and because of the committed individuals on that commission.
Okay, just a second. We have Mr. Momeni?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. We're asking the other panelists to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about why they'd like to serve on the commission. For your information, and we'll get to you in just a minute, for your information, on the dais today is Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Ferrioli, myself, Senator Brown, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Manus Anderson. There's a room of 20 people, and your testimony is being piped throughout the Capitol, so just for your information.
Okay.
All right.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is David Kong, and I have a passion to work with youth. Youth in general, all youth of all ethnicities, cultures, and I'm also, I feel like I represent a lot of different subgroups within the Asian Pacific Islander culture, because my parents are both refugees. My mom is a refugee from Laos. My dad's a refugee from Cambodia. So I grew up with parents and relatives and all the people I knew as refugees, and seeing some of the struggles within being a new immigrant / refugee, seeing some of the struggles through the healthcare system, education, with the law, and higher education first, and my father's side of the family to go to college and graduate, and from graduating went to work at McLaren Youth Correctional Facility, worked with Minority Services, and working on basically advocating for the youth within the correctional facility. Spent a lot of time volunteering before working there, and then after I left that since November and moved on to a different type of work field, but still very involved with the youth and working with different community organizations trying to advocate for youth services before they get in trouble, you know, but also after they get in trouble, because we don't want to forget about youth once they've been locked up, because there's still time for them to change, turn around, and better themselves. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Sato.
Hi, I'm Dennis Sato. I'm currently the Vice President and Chief Information Officer for Salem Regional Health Services. I actually am a member of this senior management reporting to the President and Chief Executive Officer. My primary responsibility there is really to improve information, healthcare through information technology, and I heard a lot this morning about what we need to do in our healthcare access services. I also chair the hospital's Diversity and Culture Competence Committee of the hospital. In Salem here, I'm a member of the Human Rights Commission and also a member of the Community Policing Advisory Committee, which advises Chief Jerry Moore on issues regarding diversity and other issues in the city. I've been here for 2 years, coming from California, where I was very active in human and social rights issues, being the president of the Japanese American Citizens League, the Marin County chapter, which is across the bay, the Golden Gate Bridge, and that community, where I served as a president for 10 years. I also was a chair of the Human Rights Commission in Marin County and chair of the Police Advisory Board, and also the founder of the Multicultural Commission in Novato, which deals with hate crimes in response to hate. And I'm very interested in serving in the community, basically on this commission, to help give that voice that I think that I'm not really always heard of, not only Asian issues but other minority issues. And listen to your comments, Senator Chair Brown, about diversity in the workforce and trades, but you know, we also like to look at diversity in other issues within state government boards and other issues. So that's my interest in serving on this commission. I hope and hope you would consider me as a candidate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sato. Mr. Is it Momeni? Did I say that right?
Yes.
Good morning and welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on this particular commission.
Good morning. My name is Maju Momeni, and I have to apologize. I wanted to be there, but I actually came back from a trip from Iran late last night, and I'm still suffering from a little bit of jet lag. I am originally from Iran. I came to the States in 1974 and have been a resident of Oregon since. I am currently president of my own company, CJR Inc., which is involved in real estate investment and management. My background is as a civil engineer in construction management. I've worked for many years on large projects throughout the United States. My interest in civic duties and volunteer work goes back to about 15 years ago, and it's always concentrated on the children's and education, and my interest in serving in Asian affairs is to promote the diversity of the Asians, and also help hopefully bring about a set of programs that help serve the minority. I am have been involved with Citizen Review Board for about 12 years, reviewing the cases of children that are out of home. I've been part of the executive committee for Metro's Citizen Involvement Committee. I've been involved in City of Beaverton's Citizen Involvement Committee, and I was part of the executive committee there. I'm also founder and president of Momeni Foundation, which is an organization that provides scholarships to students of Iranian background.
Thank you. I'd love to have conversations with each one of you. Mr. Sato, I'm very interested in how we can diversify our boards and commissions. We've been working very closely with the governor's office to do that. Mr. Kong, I'm currently practicing juvenile law and doing the dependency side, not the delinquency side, so I'd love to have more conversations with you about what's happening in the delinquency arena. And Mr. Chan, I'm a graduate of Lewis and Clark Law School, so I'd love to talk to you about what's going on in the law school right now. Mr. Momeni, I'm sure we could connect on some level. I can't think of it right now. But does anybody have any questions for any of these folks?
Just a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very excited to see younger people being brought in on to the commissions. And when I take a look at our State Apprentice and Training Council and our State Board of Education and then the Commission on Asian Affairs, it's too bad you can't all get together and come up with some plan. We need to be focusing on our youth. We have a critical healthcare worker shortage and the need for diversity and minorities in these various areas is critical. So it looks like we have a good selection here, and hopefully we'll be able to get something done for the good of Oregon.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions for this panel? Thank you all very much. We really appreciate your willingness to join us this morning. Ms. Reeves, Ms. Suzuki, anybody else wishing to testify? All right. Appreciate you joining us here this morning. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on the Commission on Asian Affairs, and very pleased to see a full complement, and I think now of the commission ready to rock and roll. Mr. Molina, are you ready to testify?
No.
Oh. We will wait until your mother appears. All right. Long-term care commission, let's open a public hearing. Tony Landis, come on forward. Thank you so much. Appreciate your willingness to join us this morning. My mom's always late, too, in case it makes you feel any better.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, Senators. I appreciate your time. My name is Tony Landis. I'm in my seventh year as a volunteer for the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. I'm on the Recruitment and Screening Committee for District 10, which is basically Jefferson, Crook, and Deschutes counties. I also train our friendly visitors for our program in that district. I'm also a private contractor in Deschutes County serving the interests of the elderly and disabled in living in their homes. My personal experience also includes long-term care as well as primary home care. I think it's a natural step for myself to bring my life experiences to bear serving the interests of the elderly in Oregon and to continue to increase their quality of life through whatever way I can serve. I'm looking forward to being a part of the long-term care advisory committee, and I would appreciate your consideration today. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Landis. I suspect Senator Monica Anderson has a question or two.
Just that I'm a strong advocate of the long-term care, and it's vital, and especially with those of us baby boomers who are now entering into, and especially those of us dealing with our parents, this is a real critical area at this point in time.
Thank you. I find especially for rural residents, it's an important thing to have advocates and people working for their interests and understanding their position in our state.
I chaired a long-term care committee. It must have been prior to the 03 session during the 02 when we had all those special sessions, so things kind of get lost. But I think as a state, we're really struggling to plan for a long-term care system that we're going to need. So we look forward to working with you as we develop that system as we are all aging. So, Senator Johnson.
Thank you. You may not have formed an opinion about this yet, but I would just like your philosophical response to working among and between the other commissions and boards that are dealing with the same issues. I know that the Governor's Commission on Senior Services is very concerned about the availability of long-term care and some mechanism to advocate to Oregonians that they ought to consider making arrangements for long-term care prior to the need. Do you have any comments about working between boards and commissions, finding those issues that are common to both, and seeing if we can drive even more momentum?
Well, my personal philosophy is we're all in this together. And basically, if we have the same goal, which is to improve the quality of life of our frail elderly, then whatever it takes to get that done, I look at it as part of my process, and I feel that I'm a good person to do that, to work with anyone and everyone, and any opportunity that presents itself to move toward that goal. It seems to me that that is the one and only way to do it. We're all here and living and working and aging together, and that's... We all are aging, so
Basically, on a wide level, that's my outlook.
What else? Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's a pleasure and an honor to support your nomination.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to also acknowledge the person that you are replacing on the commission. Her name is Grace K. Williams, and she's served, I think, for at least a decade on this commission. She herself was the first woman district attorney in Oregon. She was appointed in World War II to take up a vacancy that was caused by conscription of the district attorney that worked there at the time, and served with great distinction, and one of the early women members of the Bar Association as well. And she herself is now in a long-term care facility. So, your comments, Ms. Landis, about the fact that we're all aging together is absolutely right on. And I just wanted to mention Grace K. Williams and pay her a little honor for all the work that she did in this commission and other places in her career.
Well, I hope I can follow her footsteps.
You'll be doing a good thing.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Senator Farrioli. Thank you, Ms. Landon.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the Long-Term Care Commission? All right, we're going to close that public hearing, and we're going to open a public hearing on the Hispanic Affairs Commission. Mr. Molina, do you want to come forward? Do you have any other family members that you want to bring?
That's it, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Madam Chair, members of the Rules Committee. My name is David Molina, and I'm here joined with my wife, Edith, my mother, Catalina, my two sisters, Nuria and Brianna, my colleague, Rosa Olivares, and my other colleague, Julian Cervantes.
We're delighted to have everyone here this morning.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here. The son of migrant farm workers, born in Hood River, Oregonian by trade, I guess. Raised up in Mount Vernon, Washington, up in the Skagit Valley. Currently, I'm co-founder and managing partner of Red Consulting Group. I'm an entrepreneur, my first business venture, and I can see how hard it is to launch something. I've been involved in the Hispanic community for well over almost 10 years now. First, as an activist on campus, I was a former high school dropout. I dropped out for a year, and I was blessed by some educators who saw something in me. Who used to say that we are all spirits living in the human existence, Dr. Kenneth Fox would say. And they would say some other phrases that would catch me, and even though I had never read novels before, I was blessed by some of these educators of all races, of all kinds, not just Hispanic. And they believed in me, and I was successful in graduating high school and going on to community college, the first in my family to enroll and attend an institution of higher learning and receive my bachelor's in political science and politics from Oregon State University. And Oregon State did well with me in shaping who I am today, active on the campuses for well over 3 years, and received my degree there. And after, while I was at Oregon State, I enrolled in ROTC, and I was very fortunate for them to have me come on board and receive my commission in 2004 as an infantry officer. And currently I'm assigned to the 104th Division. It's a Vancouver, Washington-based institutional training reserve unit, and commanded by Major General Moffitt. And recently, for my leadership and management responsibilities, they appointed me to aide de camp, which is a French phrase, and field assistant, and I'm aide de camp to Brigadier General Eldon Regua. He's assistant division commander, and I'm very happy there as well. In the Hispanic community, I have seen a lot. I've seen a lot in the last since growing up. I've seen how folks in Mattawa, Washington, have lived on the riverbanks. Being in Oregon, I've seen how folks come together at the Salem Capitol and talk about their needs and their issues, and it appears that as though folks are not listening, or as only thing moves as pond water. And we all know in government and politics sometimes things move like pond water. And at the same time, we look at there's a lot of very passionate people out there who want to get involved and want to be part of the process, the electoral process, in terms of elections, in terms of running on school boards. And throughout this process, not only as an activist, being in service as well, helping folks reach their potential has always been my passion, because somewhere along the line, someone believes, starting with my mother, starting with my professors in college, my colleagues who said, come with us, just trying to start a business and had faith in me and thought, you know, David would be a good candidate to have on board in this company. And throughout this process, impacting people's lives, not just Hispanics, but minorities in general, young women. And throughout my work in consulting, it's exactly what I do. It's cultural competency, cultural awareness, helping young people who are troubled and, you know, having trouble in school and competing in school, enrolling in college, and actually just graduating high school in general. I think that's where the problem is in terms of the high school dropout. Hispanics make up twice the high school dropout than other races, especially white. So I think it's really important that as we see the whole picture, that we look at not just the problems but the solutions and how do we solve these solutions with the best people on board. And so I would be very happy to sit on the commission. Very enthusiastic. I was appointed, nominated by the governor. I've already met with one commissioner, and she said, you know, we've had several problems, you know, where we've been defunded. We were now just down to one, and here we are having coffee. I'm just laughing away going, you know, how could this be, you know? Here's a very important commission, and how could it come to this far? And the only way up is up. And so I met with her, and she said, go in there, go in the hearing. Tell them who you are. Tell them you would that the commission needs a lot of good people, and I'd be very happy to serve on it in whatever capacity. I've served on several capacities now as an entrepreneur in the military and the community, and I would be happy to sit on this commission here as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions, comments, Senator Nelson.
Yes, we have a very large Hispanic population in Northeast Oregon. Our community colleges are just doing a great job with trying to get past the language barrier or create jobs. I would really recommend if you get in, as you get involved in this, that you contact some of your community college folks and talk to them, because they're really willing to go out and go to bat for people of all races. So I think it would be a great thing for you to get in contact with.
Certainly.
Senator Monis Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, to the family of David, what a great role model you have here for the Hispanic community. And so glad that you were able to come and witness his testimony. Truly, it is becoming almost a crisis here regarding the increase in minorities, especially in the Hispanic community. And I feel this commission can really provide a huge role in trying to bridge the gap between the conflicts that seem to be out there in the state of Oregon, and I know nationwide. So I think it's critical to have someone young and vibrant and intelligent, enthusiastic like you, and I know you will be one who will be able to bridge that gap.
You bet. There is a lot of problems throughout the state, misunderstandings. Folks, and when you don't understand something, and you don't understand what you're getting into or what's happening, or the demographics of our society are changing across the landscape. The political landscape is changing. The process in terms of demographics at the level of every county, every city across the state of Oregon is being impacted. And how do you best bridge that gap? How do you best communicate effectively, understanding and being aware of the needs of both sides? You know, some communities have been able to bridge that gap. There are still a lot of communities that still need to bridge. In terms of the community college as well, that is huge for myself. I work a lot at community college, always being a guest speaker and empowering young youth. Because as we know, a lot of Hispanics don't go on to the higher ed. They go to community college. That's the first step. They go right into community college. The vast majority is the sixth show, and then go to higher ed. And so that's very important, yes.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Molina. This commission has really struggled both in terms of leadership over the last couple of years, and then, as you articulated, the legislature defunded all of the these particular commissions. And so we look forward to you having taking leadership on this particular commission, and are confident it's going to be in good hands. So we also look forward to working with you next session and advising us on legislative issues. So
I look forward to it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate the family all joining us today. It's great to have you here. Anything else? I think you're off the hook. So good luck.
Great. Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify in the Commission on Hispanic Affairs? Okay, we're going to close the public hearing. Open a public hearing on the maritime pilots and invite Mr. Jeff Krug and Captain Ann McIntyre forward.
Good morning. Thank you. Excuse me. Go ahead. Why don't you both introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about why you'd like to serve on this particular board.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jeff Krug. A little bit of background about myself. I went to college right across the street here at Willamette, so it's always nice to come to Salem this time of year. It brings back a lot of fond memories. I have been, since I got out of college, I've been involved in the maritime transportation world, first in marine construction for 10 years about after I got out of college. And in the past 20 years, I've been involved in the maritime transportation side of the business, working before I joined the Port of Portland. I've worked 10 years for a Japanese ocean carrier company directly, and my present position at the Port of Portland, I work in the Marine Division, and I'm General Manager of Carrier Marketing for the port. As far as my qualifications for the committee, I've served at various different capacities within the committee on the Board of Maritime Pilots and committees, Cost-Benefit Analysis Committee and the Pilot Qualification Committee are two of the committees I've served on most recently. I've also served as a lead negotiator on some past rate cases for both river and bar pilots, pension and rate-related issues. I've testified down here in Salem on pilot-related matters in front of some committees as well. My interest in this position, I think all my colleagues within the maritime transportation business feel that the future is very bright for international trade in the state of Oregon, and this can really be an economic driver for the state moving forward, particularly as globalization and trade barriers come down. So I think this committee plays a pretty key role in the fact of bringing ships safely in and out of the ports of Oregon and cost-effectively and efficiently is a key part of our transportation link to the outside world, and I think this this is my interest in serving on this committee. It's a key committee, and if I'm confirmed for this position, I'd be very proud to serve.
Questions for Mr. Kerr?
Captain McIntyre.
Hi, my name is Captain McIntyre. I am a Columbia River pilot. I'm a state licensed pilot for the Columbia and Willamette Rivers. I hold an unlimited federal master's license and federal pilotage endorsements for the Columbia, Willamette Rivers, San Francisco, and El Segundo. I graduated from California Maritime Academy in 1988. After graduation, I worked for Chevron Shipping Company on board their tankers. In 1996, I was selected by the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots as the first candidate for the Columbia River Pilots Apprenticeship Program. The apprenticeship program was created by the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots at the direction of the Oregon Legislature as part of the program to promote diversity in the Oregon Maritime Pilot Associations. And I would like to serve on the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots as a gesture of my appreciation for the opportunities that the state and my organization have presented me with. I'm also interested in continuing to assure that we maintain high standards of training and safety in all of the Oregon ports.
Questions for Captain McIntyre? Senator?
Yes, for both of them, actually, I guess. Thank you for serving. But Columbia River is my big passion. I live out in Pendleton, and part of my district is in that area. And there's so much of the whole economy, not only that area, but the state of Oregon, it depends upon the Columbia River. When people talk about tearing dams out, I go, what would you guys do as maritime pilots if you didn't have any dams out there? What's your view of the Columbia River? Is it being well taken care of? I mean, you're on it every day, or not every day, but a lot of times anyway. So if you just give me kind of some background, what's your sense of what's going on with the Columbia?
I think the Columbia River system is a huge economic driver for the state, and it seems many parties have been working very hard to take care of the channel deepening projects and to bring more business into the port. And I've seen in the time that I've been here, which has been 10 years, a lot of positive change in trying to grow the industry.
Yeah, I would echo that, too. Two things. The fact that the channel deepening project has finally started after 15 years of a process is a very positive thing for moving bulk commodities like grain out of your area. So that's gonna increase the economic cost to move that product out of your area. So it's gonna be a very good thing. Also, programs like the Connect Oregon programs, looking at freight mobility and how we move freight within the state is a very key thing, and I think that's a very positive reflection on how we're handling freight in the future in the state.
Just to follow in, basically the grain, there's not a lot of grain where I'm growing, a little bit, but in comparison, 40% of the grain or wheat that is grown in the United States actually comes down the Columbia River. It comes out of Nebraska and those, the big wheat areas. And I just think, people talk about tearing dams out, and, there used to be rapids all the way down there. You guys wouldn't be able to operate, would you, on the Columbia River if you took the dams out? Or at least...
I'm not that familiar with the subject. My understanding is that's correct, but I don't know for sure.
The flows in the river would not be regulated as they are today, certainly, if the dams on the Columbia were taken out.
Sure. Thank you.
Anything else, Senator Nelson? Senator Montes Anderson? Okay. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Krug, I listened with interest when you said that you had been a negotiator in some rate cases. It has been my experience, because my district goes all along the Columbia, as I've watched this, that some of these rate cases have been unbelievably contentious, expensive, have diverted time and energy away from other things. Given your familiarity as a negotiator, do you have any comments about what might turn down the volume on some of these highly contentious case hearings?
We have turned down the volume. Actually, we have the two most recent rate cases that happened, one with the River Pilots, one with the Bar Pilots. We did 4 and 5 year deals with both parties, so that takes us out of every 2 years going to battle on rate related issues. And there's also some mechanisms that are, being tried right now with the Bar Pilots that will allow us to regulate their income based on ship volume, so on and so forth, on a formula-based system, which makes a little more sense to, I think, the system. From that perspective, we've got two pretty long-term deals in place. There's a lot of dialogue going on in the meantime between all parties about it, because you're exactly right. Everybody recognizes there's a lot of money and effort spent on this contentious rate-setting process.
Thank you very much.
Senator Farrielly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you have this is more of my colleagues than the candidates whom I am sure are eminently well qualified to serve on the commission. If you haven't taken the opportunity to take the river trip with the Columbia River Pilots, you got to do it. It's utterly amazing. It doesn't take long. As a matter of fact, it's amazing how fast you can go from Portland to the mouth of the Columbia River. But watching those pilots work in the river, sometimes less than 100 feet away from the banks because of the way the channel runs, and seeing the size of the cargo vessels that they pilot, it's just astounding. And it's capped off by a rather exhilarating leap from the side of the freighter into a little tender that comes out to pick up the pilot and the hapless guests. It's quite astounding. But if you have an opportunity to take that trip, it'll show you a world that very few people get to view up close, and it changes your perspective on what these folks do. So I'm very happy that we have two excellently well-qualified candidates. And Captain McIntyre, you're obviously a pathfinder in more ways than just one. Thank you for your willingness to serve.
Thank you.
Just one quick question. Is there a shortage of maritime pilots? Where's the training here in Oregon? Is this something that you recruit for, or just word of mouth and family heritage?
Pilots are selected by the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots, and the selection process is set out in the administrative rules, and all pilot organizations in Oregon have extensive lists of well-qualified candidates waiting to become pilots. There's not a shortage of people looking for that job.
Good paying job.
I don't know that, Madam Chair. The stress factor is palpable. You know, you're on the bridge of a ship that may be a couple of hundred feet in length and a 90 or 100 and some odd feet in width, and the channel is relatively narrow, and it's you know, we think we've got stress. We have no stress in comparison with the changing conditions in the river every day. But it's quite an adventure.
We'd be happy to make arrangements for any of the committee members to take a trip on a ship if they'd like.
we'll put that on the to-do list. All right. Thank you very much. Any other comments from the committee? We really appreciate you joining us this morning. It's really useful to have a conversation like this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the Board of Maritime Pilots? All right, we're going to close that public hearing, open a public hearing on the Board of Naturopathic Examiners. And Glenn Taylor, come on up. I got in the whole the Racing Commission, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and Judicial Fitness.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Senators. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you as a candidate for a public member on the Oregon Board of Naturopathic Examiners. I'm a resident of Southeast Portland in Senator Brown's district. My interest in naturopathic medicine began in January of 96 when I began work at the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, not really knowing what a naturopath was at that point. And since visits to the student clinics were one of the benefits of being employed there, my family members and I started using that care to complement our more traditional allopathic experience. Over the 8.5 years I was there, I used many of the modalities that are covered under the umbrella of naturopathic medicine. I'm aware of others, even if I didn't personally use them. Even though I'm employed now by the Dougie Center, which is a nonprofit in Southeast Portland, we still use naturopathic care. I'm able to. I now have the time to set aside to serve on another board or community activity, and I knew that there was an opening on the OB&E, and it seemed like a good place to use my time, energy, and interest. I think you have a resume from before, but there's a copy of my resume attached, and I have served on many community and government boards at the non-state level, whether they be community organizations or Portland School District or Portland City. Look forward to working with my new colleagues on the OB&E board after my nomination is confirmed.
All right. Thank you. Questions? Sarah Monis Anderson? None? Sarah Johnson?
Thank you. I can't miss this opportunity to acknowledge publicly the good work of the Dougie Center. I have acted as an advisor on one of their fundraising initiatives and know the organization and know of its international reputation for outstanding work.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Yes, it's a great place to work.
And thank you, Senator Johnson. Since it's in my district, I was going to do the same thing. I had a personal experience with the Dougie Center. We lost a friend a couple of months ago. A 42-year-old woman collapsed from a hemorrhage, and she has two kids. And we were able to access materials from the Dougie Center to take to her husband, and we just really appreciated knowing that the center was there. It's frankly very close to my house, so it was easy to access, and we really appreciate the good work that they do. So,
Madam Chair, Senator, also as a public health nurse, I also actually had to refer some things to the Dougie Center. So you're well known.
We appreciate it.
So we appreciate your service at the Dougie Center, and we also appreciate your willingness to serve on the Board of Naturopathic Examiners. So thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? You're off the hook. Appreciate you joining us from Southeast Portland. All right. Anybody else wishing to testify on the Board of Naturopathic Examiners? Close that public hearing. Open public hearing on the Board of Racing. Racing Commission. And we have Carrie Johnson. Come on forward. Are you in a hurry?
Thank you.
Good morning, Senators. I am Carrie Johnson. I live in Sayo with my husband and two children. I am a small business owner, and I manage my husband's two dental practices. I have a lifelong working involvement in the equine industry, showing both paint and quarter horses, and it's been a very successful career for me, winning 12 world and reserve world championships. Earlier in 2000, I was appointed by the Linn County Commissioners as chair of the Linn County Expo Advisory Committee. I continue to serve as that position. In 2002, I became an organizing founder of Willamette Community Bank, which is a locally owned bank in Albany. I serve on the board of directors, the audit committee, and also on the planning and development committee for the bank. In 2005, I became a member of the Linn County Fair Board, and I serve as vice chair on that board. I feel I bring unique assets to the Oregon Racing Commission with vast equine regulatory and small business experience. Racing in Oregon faces many challenges, and I look forward to... I'm a little nervous. I look forward to being part of racing's continuation as a viable industry within the state of Oregon. I would like to thank you for your time and ask you for your support of my appointment to this committee.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson, could you tell us a little bit about your equine activities? I assume you're not racing yourself.
No. I have raced in the past, and I think it's a great sport and a great industry. I focus most of my equine on showing halter horses and also breeding.
Great. Senator Amanda Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is your view on the racing industry, at least here at the Portland Meadows, including now video gambling in as a part of the racing industry? Do you have a view one way or another?
No, not really.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Johnson. We look forward to working with you on this particular commission and doing what we can to save the horse racing industry in Oregon. So I know it's struggling. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wishing to testify on the Racing Commission appointment? All right. Ms. Rihala, why don't you come up and testify on your appointment to the Judicial Fitness Committee. Colleagues, as you may recall, Mr. Barlow testified early this morning. He asked to testify because he had a court appearance, so I let him off the hook. I think his concerns, it's fair to say, were addressed at the commission as a whole, not on Ms. Rihala's particular appointment. But Ms. Rihala, why don't you tell us why you wish to serve on this commission?
All right. Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. I am Shelby Rihala, and I'm the governor's appointment for the Judicial Fitness Commission. I believe Mr. Barlow this morning raised some important points, and he pointed out that this is a board that deals in fairness, and I believe it's very important to critically examine and objectively look at the complaints before this board. They are serious. They do affect people's lives, and he was right to weigh them heavily. My legislative experience, however, shows that not all complaints have the same amount of merit, and I believe it's the duties of this commission and myself as a member of the commission to examine those complaints thoughtfully, reflectively, and to evaluate them. It sounds like a fascinating committee. I look forward to continuing my public service in this capacity. And from what I know of the commission members, it sounds like a thoughtful, considerative group, and I look forward to joining them.
Thank you. Ms. Rahal, I was designated by the good Senator Richard Devlin to let all committee members know. As you know, Senator Devlin has been involved in the legislative process for a long period of time now, and he tells me that Ms. Rihala is the best legislative assistant he has ever had. He probably says that to all his other legislative assistants, but he asked me specifically to share that since he couldn't be here today. Any questions for Ms. Rihala? Sarah Myers Anderson.
Also, she is also a Willamette alum, so you add that to your resume.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Anybody else? I think you're off the hook. I think this is not an easy commission to serve on. As you know, it's a bit of a juggling act, but we
I feel confident that you can fulfill this role. So, thank you.
Madam Chair, just to click on
Senator Nelson.
From the previous testimony from
Mr. Barlow.
I mean, his statements that basically all judges are bad, I thought that was completely off base. Because, I mean, it's a tough job being a judge. And I'm used to practice law. I've had judges throw me out of court. most times they were right, unfortunately. And so, I mean, they do make difficult decisions, but, you know, just in defense of the judicial system, I have great respect for judges.
I think it's important to separate the person from the actions and the policy behind it. Just because one doesn't agree with a decision made does not mean it's meritorious.
I was threatened with contempt of court.
Senator Nelson. Senator Nelson.
That's a side here to poor shielded.
I know. Judge.
So, all right, Senator Nelson. Well, I hope we're going to get out of here on time so I don't get threatened with contempt of court this morning for being late. So, thanks very much for joining us. Anybody else wishing to testify on the Judicial Fitness Commission? Hearing none. Last, live but not least, Ms. Wilson, why don't you come forward, and we're going to open a public hearing on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. We're hoping to get Dr. Cornelius and then Joyce DeMonin and Wendy Jones on the phone, and then I think we just need to vote, and we'll be wrapping it up. So,
okay,
thank you, and we really appreciate your patience. Oh. So.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Sitting out here, I'm still a lifelong learner, and so listening to all of this just gave me, I want to add more to mine, but I do want to get out of here, so I'm trying to make this brief as possible. My name is Cassandra Wilson. I was born, raised, and still live in Portland, Oregon. I would like to be on the TSBC board to be part of the process of making sure we continue to employ the best educators for our state's children. I want all children, no matter where they live in Oregon, to have the best educators. I'm on the Legislative Committee and Teachers' Voice in Politics with Portland Association of Teachers. I'm also on the Legislators Advisory Council for OEA. I've been to Salem several times in my 9-year career as an educator, bringing my students down to meet their senators and representatives. I testified last spring at a Senate hearing to, consider our students and all their special needs and their teachers' special needs. So I really have a strong opinion about the TSPC. It was hard. It's a hard time to be certified in Oregon, and I don't mean that as a negative. I'm proud of Oregon's high level of trying to get a license and to be certified. I've been to NEA conventions in Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., and we'll be going to NEA conventions in Orlando. And it's always nice to hear from other teachers from other states to know about Oregon and how high our certification, what it takes to be certified. I'm also a student of public education and private education. I had a difficult time learning as a child, and I was almost slipped through the cracks. And math and reading and writing were difficult for me in elementary, but I didn't have teachers that really noticed me until I got to middle school. And in middle school, it's pretty awful to say, you're going to go in that special class, and I was very embarrassed. Like, I'm just getting so nervous right now. But I decided to go back to college. I was a truck driver in 1975. I drove an 18-wheeler truck and hauled cow feed around Oregon and Washington. I learned how to fly planes. I climbed Mount Hood. I climbed the Andes last summer, and I always kept challenging myself, thinking, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't go to college. I'm 36. My daughter going to Lincoln High School and West Sullivan, I said, you know what? I really want to be a teacher. And I don't want to just be a teacher. I want to be an educator. And I decided I wanted to go back and teach in the inner city. So I teach at Woodlawn Elementary. This is my first year there. I taught 8 years at Applegate before they closed it. So I just find that it's so important to continue to do professional development. And also I think what I bring on the board is life experiences with my students. I always tell my students, I said, school wasn't easy for me. teachers didn't listen to me or couldn't find me. And I said, I don't want any of you to feel that way. I want you to be able to say, I can do anything. And you don't necessarily have to go to college. And I stress that to my students. You can do other jobs. And they know about my truck driving, and they know about my flying airplanes, and they know about I was picked to be teacher on the trail for the Iditarod Sled Dog Race in 2003. They picked one teacher in the nation a year, and I worked really hard for that. My kids were part of that. I always look for other things to look, to be educated on, to bring into the classroom. For those students who don't feel comfortable, it's like, just get them excited. And what I got my kids excited about for reading was the Iditarod and Sled Dog Racing. And I had inner city kids who were at first, second grade reading level in the fourth and fifth grade. They were reading Gary Paulson by the end of the year, and they were really excited. And so I was so honored that the governor appointed for me to do this, to come up from I can't do anything to all the challenges and goals that I've set, I've made. And I've told my students the main reason I have that energy and is just when I finally learned how to read and I finally loved reading. I said, you can read and you can go anywhere in the world and you can do anything. And I said, another thing, you can do anything if you can read and write. And I said, everything I've done, I had the chance to travel to Washington, D.C. for NEA. It's because of my writing skills that I finally learned. And I said, and when you read about something, you want to go there, just do it. Just do it. And I love being in inner city schools. It's a tough job, but I'm really glad. So I don't know if I answered any of your questions, but I would really like to be on this because I understand when teachers come and you have to take that MSAT test. And I will admit, I passed it the first time only because I think it was the first year that we had to take it. And they go, well, they're going to take the first-timer scores, and you'll automatically pass them. Thank you. And but the CBEST test, I had took it three times. I had to take it. I passed the reading first. Didn't pass the math, then I just kept taking it. And I tell my students, it's like the Iditarod Sled Dog Race. They have checkpoints. And you go to Anchorage and you have to make it to Nome. And I said, you have to take those steps. And it doesn't matter how long it takes you, you're always a winner. And that's what the mushers do. I mean, it doesn't matter. When they make it to Nome, they're a winner. And I tell my students, no matter how long it takes you to fill your dream, you can do it. So.
Senator Johnson.
Ms. Wilson and I had a conversation on the phone last night, and she said how nervous she was. I didn't know she was going to come here today and knock it out of the park. You've done a great job.
Oh, well, I was so happy when Senator Johnson called. She goes, hi, this is Betsy Johnson. And I had to call all the senators. We got this letter you had to call, and I wasn't sure what to say. And she calls me back, and Betsy Johnson. I go, hi. And she goes, hi, this is Betsy Johnson. I'm like, hi. And I said, oh, you're from Scappoose, right, in that area. And I said, I was just, and she helped me so much. And I said, I don't want to sound like an idiot, And so, anyway, I have a passion for this, and thank you.
Ms. Wilson, my only question is, so you said you were picked to do the Iditarod. Did you actually go on it?
No. Okay, you could let me tell you what I got to do. I was up there for a month, and what I did was I wrote lesson plans to make a thematic unit for math, science, art, drama, music, reading, writing, all to do with the Iditarod. And so they flew me up there. I got suited up for minus 100 degrees below zero. It only got to 40 degrees below zero. And what I would do is they gave me my own pilot, and basically that's what I really wanted because I love airplanes. I don't fly anymore, but in a single engine plane, and we would fly along the Yukon from Anchorage to Nome. And I landed on the Yukon River about 20 times a day, got out of the plane, took pictures of the dogs, talked to the mushers. You sleep with the mushers, but it's in a huge room, and you just slap down your sleeping bag, and that's all I had for 2 weeks was a sleeping bag and my survival suit. Then I had a laptop, and I wrote lesson plans and wrote articles and sent it back to Anchorage, and they put it on their webpage.
Oh, and what an incredible experience.
So it was 2.5 weeks of talking to villagers and visit schools, and it was incredible. It was incredible. I was very lucky.
Senator Nelson?
Yes, that's a great story. I just want to bring you back a little bit from my district, rural district, 23 school districts. We have a hard time keeping teachers out there. They have to be well-educated, master's degrees. It's a lot easier for the teachers to go to the big city and enjoy some of the things. So one of the real problems that we have is keeping and maintaining teachers in our two or 300 school districts.
I think it's the are you done? Did I interrupt you?
Yes.
Okay. Go, I would say people ask me, because I'm in an inner city, like, oh, why are you still in it? And I'm not going to be noble enough to say, oh, it makes me feel wonderful every night. No, every night I'm exhausted, and this year seemed to be kind of a really rough year, because I'm not able to get a group of students to get energized about learning. To keep teachers, I would say hopefully their communities would just thank them. And I think a lot of times, as your jobs, thank you. I think that's in the whole human population. If there's gratitude and if there's realization that... And I kind of went back to college thinking, oh, getting off, going to school at 7:30, getting off at 3:30. I didn't realize it was a 24/7 job. And it really is. If you're a dedicated educator, that's what it is. And I think that's the way it is in the private sector. If you're passionate about your job, you're going to do it. And to keep teachers in, I would say, like everybody else, health insurance.
Okay, we just to follow. Basically, a lot of our communities are dying because we don't have jobs. We can't cut timber anymore. And if you look at our ability mm-hmm. to fund public education or any of our public services, the decline starts in about 1991. That's about when we stopped getting in and harvesting our federal forest.
Mm-hmm.
So my job is to help educate you, too, and mm-hmm. say, okay, you want better access for people in the urban areas, and I want better access and better schools.
I'm
going to have to find some place to find some money. And so when I'm turning from a rural person to an urban person saying, trust what we're doing out there. We can actually take care of things and help you folks in the urban area so you have more money for your schools. It'll help us have more money for our schools. And so I just want to make that connection.
Yeah. Well, and I also like to say with that is, there's a lot of urban students that I would like to have them. We had a gentleman out here talking about vocational education. And I think sometimes, especially in my school, I would like to have my students go to college. But I also think even at a grade level, I'm an elementary school teacher, even at that grade level, I think there should be some more openings and discussing with students that you don't have to go to college, but I would like to see some economy in Oregon where we can have more vocational jobs. So, and I was married to a forester from Lebanon, so I know a lot about the forestry and how that was an impact on those communities. And I'm also on the OEA advisory council there, and I've talked to teachers from your area and all those other places, and I am a Portland girl, but I'm a big wilderness girl, too. And I've always put my hand out to them. It's my thing, because I know it's an urban-rural kind of fight, even within that state union thing. And I want to be the one to put my hand out. Like, I always say, why do we always have to have our meetings in Salem or Portland? Why can't I, as a Portland teacher, let's have our meetings for this council in Bend or in Klamath Falls? And I always, want to be open and have that open communication, because we're all educating Oregon students, and I think all teachers are feeling the pressure, and I think the students are really feeling the pressure. I have fifth graders that are taking 5 tests on TESSA for reading, for math, for science, and I truly believe in accountability for students. But what I try to stress, I don't teach to the test. What I try to teach my kids is to love the act or the feeling of learning, and I try not to think about the test.
So.
Well, Ms. Wilson, you were delightful. I think we've run out of questions, but we really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule, and we'll let you get back
to the classroom.
It's kind of nice having a day off. I was going to bring all my fifth graders here, and I,
oh.
And real, I now I know what the last fifth grade student feels like when it's time to do their speech. It brings back memories.
Well, we look forward to seeing your fifth graders when we're at. You should bring them down when we're in session.
I do every year. I bring students down every year. So when you're in session next year, you will see us.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Senator Johnson.
It's my pleasure.
Anybody else wishing to testify on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission? Okay, we're going to close that public hearing. James on the phone. Who are you calling?
Lisa. He's putting in a lunch order.
Want to serve on a commission?
You're not connecting. Dr. Cornelius? All right. Let's see. Is it parents' way? While we're waiting for Dr. Cornelius on the phone, let's move to this page 2 of your agenda. We waived a number of appearances. I'm going to go into work session and move those appearance waived appointments. Oh, okay. You need to say
I'm not going anywhere.
Okay.
I'm right here.
All right. Open a work session on the State Board of Chiropractic Examiners, the Oregon Investment Council, Lane County Mass Transit District Board, Board of Medical Examiners, State Board of Tax Practitioners, State Workers' Comp Board, and the State Workforce Investment Board. The chair would waive the appearances of Minga Guerrero, Richard Solomon, Susan Band, Gary Gatos, Clifford Devaney, Mary Van Natta, Vera Langer, Greg Lowell, and David Officer, and move that the Senate approve the following appointments. Question, discussion. Senator Johnson.
I know that we're going to get a second bite at the apple with the opportunity to talk to Dr. Cornelius about the State Board of Medical Examiners, and I will have no problem supporting what you want to do with respect to Mr. Devaney. But I just wanted to get on the record that I had the opportunity to call the Board of Medical Examiners the other day about an issue that had arisen in my district that had to do with a physician driving around with a dead body in the back of his personal vehicle. And I basically got blown off by the person that answered the phone. And I am enthusiastic about having the opportunity to discuss with Dr. Cornelius what, as a member of the board, what instruction the doctor would give their professional staff at the board with respect to dealing with constituent calls into the board.
Okay. Dr. Cornelius,
yes.
If you could just give us just a second. We've got a motion on the table right now, and so I would like to move forward on the motion, then we'll come back to you.
That's just fine.
Thank you. The motion was to waive the following appearances and that the reappointments be moved to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they be confirmed en bloc. Any further discussion? James, would you please call the roll?
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Monson.
Aye.
Senator Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Ferriero. Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Dr. Cornelius, I don't know if you heard the tail end of Senator Johnson's comments or not.
I'm afraid I did not.
Okay. First of all, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on the Board of Medical Examiners, and we truly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
Very welcome. I just completed a 3-year term serving on the Podiatry Advisory Council to the BME. Because, of course, up until December, we just had a separate council. Found that to be very enlightening and informing, and it gave me an opportunity to see how the board functions. I do feel that they play a vital role in trying to ensure the safety of the public. And I've had the opportunity, of course, to work very closely with multiple staff members at the BME, including the director, Kathleen Haley. So I do feel that that experience hopefully puts me in a position where I can be a positive factor here for the BME.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And this particular position was created via legislation that we passed last session through the committee's information. Senator Johnson, why don't you restate your question?
Thank you. Dr. Cornelius, what I wanted to explore was I had my first opportunity to call the Board of Medical Examiners about a month ago. I had a situation arise in my district wherein a physician was driving around allegedly with a dead body in the back of his personal vehicle. a relative, and he had had the body released by the hospital and personally drove the body, allegedly, down to California rather than have professional arrangements to move the body. I called the Board of Medical Examiners, and I was frankly shocked at the reception that I got from the people answering the phone. I was just dismissed, and shame on me for my lack of enthusiasm to pursue it, but I got such a cold reception from the people answering the phone, and I was just curious to explore with you, as a policymaker for the board, a member of the board, what your philosophy would be in instructing the professional staff there in dealing with the public.
I think, Senator Johnson, just as all physicians, I, of course, took a Hippocratic oath when I graduated from podiatric medical school to ensure the well-being of my patients, so a story like that just absolutely horrifies me, as I'm sure it did yourself. It's been my understanding that the way the board is supposed to function is that when an anonymous call comes into the board, that is supposed to go to the investigative members who are supposed to get the wheels turning, and then if they feel that it is a claim that deserves to be investigated, that is to be done. So I'm rather shocked and appalled that you had that type of response when you called the BME, and I can't explain why that would have happened. It should not have happened, in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate your response, and it's my responsibility to take up the cause again and try to get at least a cordial reception from the people that answer the phone, and then hopefully someone interested in finding out why a medical doctor would be allegedly driving around with a corpse in the back of his personal vehicle.
Exactly.
So.
If you don't mind my asking, Senator Johnson, did it get any further than just the receptionist?
No, I just gave up. I got jerked around so hard when I called in that I have to admit that I just folded up my tent.
I am absolutely appalled that that's what occurred. I unfortunately cannot explain it, because that is not my understanding of what should have taken place.
Well, just your awareness of it as you move forward, presumably through the confirmation process, will serve my purposes for today. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
Any other questions for Dr. Cornelius? Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Cornelius, it's you, of course, are going to be the first non-MD, so to speak, to serve on the board. And I admire that you're willing to take this role on, and I truly do hope that the board will take your expertise and your view of health care and health services to heart, because I think that board truly needs it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, the legislation that we passed last session enables a podiatrist to serve on the board, but this particular position is then limited to voting on issues regarding podiatry. So
that is correct. That is my understanding as well.
And I think it's fair to say it was a compromise. And any other questions for Dr. Cornelius? We thank you. Oh, Senator Ferrielli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for Dr. Cornelius, there was a point in the not-too-distant past, and maybe it's mostly mythological past, where physicians were held in universally high regard, and often their professionality was a question, and we are not in that era anymore. I think it falls to your board to really be the first line of defense for the credibility of the medical community by disciplining physicians that richly deserve to be disciplined.
Correct.
And I'm thinking that the credibility of the medical profession took a pretty serious hit with the Dr. Patel incident that I think is fresh in people's minds.
Yes, and so I agree.
It's a huge responsibility, and I'm sure you'll discharge it to the best of your ability.
As I mentioned, Senator Ferrioli, before, when I took that Hippocratic oath, that certainly was within my heart and what I intend, and I realize at times it may be very difficult to discipline colleagues and so forth, but I feel that if there is any claim that comes in on any physician where the physician is obviously not upholding that oath that he or she took, that should be investigated, and depending on the outcome of the investigation, that the appropriate actions need to be taken.
Thank you, and just one other comment, and this is for the record, and I hope other
board and commission candidates either are listening or will hear this through the grapevine. The experience of legislators from both the majority and the minority parties is that often our phone calls do not get returned in the interim. But I would suggest to you that it is a very unwise and perhaps a career-altering move to ignore Senator Johnson's telephone
call. He said it might.
And if that could be conveyed to the administrative staff, that would possibly
make sure that the appropriate people there are very much aware of that.
Well, it could possibly extend their shelf life.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Cornelius. I think that ends our questions. We really appreciate you accommodating us and your busy schedule this morning, and we'll let you get back to your practice.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate your time.
Take care and good luck. It'll be interesting. I'll be curious to hear from you about your experience of serving on the Board of Medical Examiners.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
All right. While James gets Joyce DeMonen on the phone, the chair would close the work session on the board or the public hearing on the Board of Medical Examiners, open a work session on the director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, I would move the appointment of Bob Repine to the director of Oregon Economic and Community Development.
Senator Johnson has moved the appointment of Bob Repine as the Director of Department of Economic and Community Development with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none. So ordered. Senator Johnson, would you please carry that?
I would be pleased to.
Thank you. Are we connected yet? Not quite? All right. Chair would open a work session on the long-term care ombudsperson. Senator Monis Anderson.
I move that we accept the appointment of the Meredith Cote for serving on the long-term care ombudsperson commission.
Thank you. Senator Monis Anderson has moved that the Senate approve the appointment of Meredith Cote as the long-term care ombudsperson. Discussion. Any objection? So ordered. How are we doing? Still not connected. I'm sorry?
You page this person. Press 5 now.
Okay. All right. Let's move along to the next appointment. Thank you, James, for trying.
I hate it when people call. Don't leave a message.
And does that happen to you often, Senator Ferrielli?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, and I'll have Senator Monis Anderson carry. All right. Since we're not connected yet, I'm going to try this one. I would open a work session on the Commission on the State Apprenticeship and Training Council, Commission on Asian Affairs, State Board of Chiropractic Examiners, Oregon Board of Dentistry, State Board of Education, Fair Dismissals Appeals Board, Commission on Hispanic Affairs, Commission on Judicial Fitness and Disability, Long-Term Advisory Committee, Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots, Board of Medical Examiners, Board of Naturopathic Examiners, Oregon Racing Commission, Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. The chair would move that we approve, that the Senate approve the appointments of the following folks: Jennifer Burnett, Tammy Lee Howard, Bill Chin, David Kong, Moji Momene, Dennis Sato, Kevin Shuba, Mary Davidson, Norm Magnuson, Artemio Paz, Joseph Jordan, Kevin Keeley, David Molina, Shelby Rihala, Tony Landis, Jeffrey Krug, Ann McIntyre, Lisa Cornelius, Glenn Taylor, Carrie Johnson, and Cassandra Wilson to their respective boards. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing and seeing that, so ordered. Senator Ferrielli, would you please carry those appointments?
Yes, ma'am.
Are we on?
Wendy
Jones. Okay. Thanks, everybody. We're opening a public hearing and work session on the State Board of Tax Practitioners. Ms. Jones, good morning.
Good morning.
I have at the dais with me Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Ferrielli, myself, Kate Brown.
Senator Dave Nelson and Senator Lori Montes-Anderson. We have a very small audience, but you are being piped throughout the Capitol. So could you please tell us a little bit about yourself and why you would like to serve on the State Board of Tax Practitioners, especially since we're, two weeks away from the big day?
Well, I wasn't quite expecting this to all happen so close to the big day. My primary education is in the nursing field, and I worked in that field for about 20 years. I guess I should start with I'm a born and raised Oregonian, and grew up in the valley and then moved over to the east side of the Cascades in the 70s. I think that all of us should have a commitment to our state and to whatever profession we have in keeping that as professional a group as possible and in serving the rest of the state. So so my commitment really is to try to follow through on the goals of the tax board. And I think one of the primary ones that I'm interested in that currently I don't see followed through on very strongly is the information to the public on tax preparers in the state of Oregon, because we have a very unique situation being the only state that requires licensing of tax preparers.
Okay. Ms. Jones, I just want to clarify for the record your current professional licensing and certifications.
Yes.
You are a licensed tax consultant.
I currently am a licensed tax consultant and also an enrolled agent.
You're also a certified arborist.
Yes, that's correct.
A master practitioner of NLP and a Reiki master?
Reiki.
Okay. Yes. I've never had the opportunity to have Reiki. So, all right. Questions from the committee?
What is Reiki?
Oh, that's a very good question. Could you please tell the committee what is Reiki?
Reiki is a kind of hands-on healing. A lot of the hospitals are using non-invasive healing methods to help assist in post-operative or severely ill patients, and it helps with kind of clearing the mind and relaxation and helps people to heal faster. St. Charles in Central Oregon has a great program with that, and it's been acknowledged as assisting in shorter hospital stays. So,
all right.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, Ms. Jones, we really appreciate your willingness to serve on this particular board. I think we're in awe of your background as well as the other backgrounds of all the Oregonians that testified in front of us today. We're really overwhelmed, frankly, about the talent of folks that are willing to serve on these boards and commissions. So we appreciate your service, and thanks so much for your time this morning.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We are in work session on Ms. Jones' appointment to the Oregon Tax Practitioner, State Board of Tax Practitioners. The chair would move the appointment to the Senate floor with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So the one little piece of detail that we have left is that Joyce Damonen is not available to testify apparently this morning on the Board of Patient Safety Standards. Do folks want to carry her appointment over, or do you wish to move forward on her appointment this morning?
Let's move forward.
All right. We're going to open a public hearing on Joyce Damonen's appointment to the Patient Safety Board of Directors. Anybody wishing to testify? I'm not seeing anyone who wishes to testify. The chair would move Joyce Damonen's appointment to the Patient Safety Board of Directors. Any discussion? Any objection?
Madam Chair, I just would like to note that this deviates from what the practice has been, and I just don't want people to get the idea that this is acceptable. I think this is an understandable situation, but by and large, the expectation is for first-time appointees that they appear.
Yes, and I don't know why we're unable to connect with her this morning. So
If folks have specific questions and concerns, I would really encourage you to move forward. As Senator Johnson notes, that this is not our usual course of practice. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair,
Senator Mona Sanderson.
I am aware of Joyce DeMonen of Clackamas and the fact that her experience as a public health officer is really qualifies her to serve well on this particular commission.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Mona Sanderson. James, why don't you call the roll?
Senator Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Mona Sanderson.
Aye.
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 Chair
votes aye. Okay. Carriers we need. Senator Nelson, would you carry, please, the appointments that we waived?
Sure.
All right. And then I'll and Senator Farioli is going to carry the en bloc appointments of the remaining appointments. And then I'll carry DeMonen and Ms. Jones. Okay. All right. Any further business to come before the committee? Thank you all. I really appreciate your willingness to participate this morning. To the governor's office, you did an outstanding, incredibly outstanding job of moving forward on these appointments. I am just frankly overwhelmed about the quality of the appointments that were before us this morning, and I suspect my committee members feel the same way. On that happy note, we'll see you all next time, and we're adjourned.